back, everybody, to the X-Cast. The truth is in here. I'm your host today, Carl Sweeney. And today we continue our coverage of Season 11, Episode 2, This. And with me today, as she has been for the last few days, is Clara Cook. Hi, Clara.
Hi, Carl.
Are you ready to discuss Mr. Glenn Morgan, Clara?
I am indeed.
Okay, so Glenn Morgan's last outing, Clara, was Home Again. You know, he wrote and directed that episode. That was an episode that I liked, kind of had a mixed to positive reaction overall. It kind of melded these two storylines together, and not everybody thought it was a good fit. But what did you think of Home Again, if you can cast your mind back?
I didn't mind it so much. It's not one of my worst episodes, if you see what I'm saying. It's not one of the ones that I probably don't like. I have watched it about two times since I watched it. I mean, I watched it about three times. So I watched it the first time and then watched it twice again after that. So it is something that I would rewatch. I agree with some people with the fact that the two storylines are sort of haphazardly meshed together. But I think separately, the two storylines are quite good. So
yeah,
it doesn't necessarily, I don't find it as offensive as like something like Babylon, for instance. What I would say is that's interesting in Home Again, as also exists in Home and also exists in this episode, is the use of music. And especially in the case of Home and this episode where the assassins are driving, and this episode, the assassins or killers are driving to Mulder's house while music plays. And that reminded me very much of the Peacock brothers driving to the sheriff's house in Home. And it also reminded me very much of the trash man going to like kill somebody while the music was playing. And that seems like be like a motif that Glenn Morgan uses again and again.
Indeed, yeah. And another example there is the use of the Partridge Family song in Never Again, which is another episode he wrote, co-wrote with James Wong. So yeah, it's definitely something he does again and again. It's where you've got the music used as kind of a counterpoint to the on-screen action. And, you know, he likes the contrast of the two effects. And I think it worked very well in this episode where you had, of course, the song was California Sun by the Ramones, obviously Langley's favourite band. And then you hear another version of the same song by the Rivieras in the bar later on in the scene where Scully gets all jittery. But yeah, that was a great way to start the episode, I thought. And, you know, Glenn Morgan's talked in interviews recently about this episode. And, you know, he's got to be an action director, really, to pull this episode off. And he was kind of a bit nervous going into it, I believe. And he said that they've got a new director of photography who made them all look good. And Morgan said he was kind of hurt last time, season 10, because some fans were asking if they made the show look retro deliberately. And he said what really hurt is that wasn't the intention at all. So this time there was an intention to do things differently, you know. So he had to achieve this new look. And he also has got this action stuff to pull off, which, you know, if you're not a seasoned director of that kind of thing, I imagine it's a tricky proposition. So how well do you think he did pull it off?
I think he did really well. I think it's really well filmed. I think the action is very effective. I think the fact that that the scenes in the stairwell, I mean, just the scenes in the house to begin with are very effective. It's fast paced, but you can tell what's going on. Sometimes with action, it's so fast paced you have no idea what's going on. I'm sure they must have used stunt doubles at some point, but it wasn't clear to me at what point Gillian Anderson was there and what point a stunt double was there. It all looked very believable to me. The scenes in the stairwell are very clever. It seemed a little bit like parkour, you know? It was quite cool. I think one scene that he filmed, which I thought was really effective, was the scenes between Mulder and Scully and Skinner in the parking garage. The way that started, it started up sort of high up in the parking garage, and then kind of Skinner comes in sort of in the background, and it focuses on Skinner, and you only really see Mulder and Scully through the windscreen of the car once Skinner has opened the door of the car and got his gun out. So and the way it's lit as well, this kind of cold icy blue kind of color to the filming, I think it's just really effective.
Yeah, I felt so too. And another thing he's talked about is his kind of influences going into this episode. So in this interview I've read, it's on sci-fi.com. He says, I was really trying to do my part to bring the X-Files into the realm of Black Mirror. So I thought it was fascinating that he acknowledged that as an explicit influence. Of course, Black Mirror has just recently returned for a new series. I haven't seen the new season yet. But I can definitely see that in the stuff, obviously, with Langley and so on. And, you know, just the ideas, basically. And I mean, this episode I was excited about in advance because he'd mentioned that he wanted to do an X-File, he wanted to do the X-Files meets North by Northwest, you know, in reference to Alfred Hitchcock's film. And that just kind of sounded right up my alley, basically. So I was really looking forward to this. And I mean, the North by Northwest is an obvious comparison. That's the one with Cary Grant on the run, you know. But the one it reminded me of was the Hitchcock film The 39 Steps, which is where you had the protagonists kind of handcuffed together for a time, which is exactly what happened to Mulder and Scully here. I mean, I would have liked to see a bit more of Mulder and Scully in handcuffs. And I don't mean that in like a, I don't mean that in like a slash fiction type way, although I'm sure there is a fanfic being delivered, being written as we speak. But I meant just like seeing their resourcefulness, seeing how they would get out of situations, you know. So Mulder and Scully on the Run, I kind of anticipated years ago that this might be what the second movie turned out to be, you know, something like this. But obviously it went a different direction. But I just really liked that stuff, you know.
Yeah, me too. Me too. And like I said in previous podcasts that we've done, like, it puts them in different situations and it puts them in different locations. It means that they have to be very resourceful. It's also a real mystery. You know, like, stories and films and TV series that are about people on the run are real mysteries. You know, you're really following them along for a ride. And I think that's really effective in this. I mean, and they don't immediately solve it either. And I felt like a little bit suffered perhaps because it wasn't as much of a climax at the end of it. But at the same time, I kind of liked that. I liked it, the idea that they, you know, Mulder fights this guy, thinks he's going to puke because he's just been beaten up, and then says, we're going to go bring this woman to justice. And then, of course, she's not there. But I liked the idea that they were quite calm at the end of it. They were like, that's it, we're going to do our job. And then at the very end of it, they go back and basically sit on the sofa again. So I've read that some people thought it was anticlimactic, but I kind of like that. I think that was kind of realistic.
I didn't have a problem with the climax. I felt that some of the season 10 episodes climaxed quite abruptly, but I didn't feel that was the case here. So in that regard, I really enjoyed it. In terms of his influences, I think that the cemetery scene provides another nod there, because we discover Deep Throat's real name, which is Ronald Pecula. And Ronald we knew about because that's actually mentioned in Musings of a Cigarette Smoking Man back in season 4. But the surname Pecula is a reference to the film director Alan J. Pecula, who directed All the President's Men, The Parallax View, Clute, and, you know, all these like 1970s conspiracy thrillers that were such a formative influence on the X-Files, you know. So I just thought that was a nice tip of the hat.
Yeah, there is also, aren't all the other names on the headstones actually mean something? Like, I think isn't one of them named after Gillian Anderson's daughter? And then there's another one which is named after a visual arts director that Glenn Morgan has worked with in other shows and stuff. So I think all the headstones that the camera pans across and you see all the names, they're all actually references to real people who are somehow involved with the X-Files. Or with Glenn Morgan.
Yeah, that's really nice, isn't it? I mean, I can imagine that if you're making a series, you know, that's just kind of irresistible to do stuff like that. But yeah, it's always really cool to hear about that, isn't it? I mean, that kind of hits on something I was going to ask you about, your stance on, really, is that we get a lot of references to old episodes and stuff here. So, you know, we find out about Deep Throat, and there are allusions to Home. I mean, the teaser kind of reminds me a bit of Home, where you get this trio of guys bearing down on the house, you know. But then also you see it on the X-Files in Skinner's office and so on. There are other episodes. Killswitch is kind of evoked, and there's a reference to the Marburg virus, which is actually a nod to Millennium. So, I mean, where do you stand on the balance of, like, Easter eggs and that kind of thing? Do you find them a distraction? Or are you kind of, like, you know, overjoyed when they turn up? And, like, how do you think you got the balance here?
Oh, no, I love them. I love them. And I actually think I love them. I actually love them in any show that I've watched for a long time, not just The X-Files. I think you got the balance here really well because they weren't too intrusive. You know, whereas I think maybe the Were-Monster episode in season 10, they were slightly too intrusive. Like the idea that he was sitting right next to the grave of
Kim Manners,
yeah. It was just a little bit too much, like, in my face. But then, well, there was more of a comedy episode, so everything was really in your face anyway, to be honest. It's interesting because you've got a question, like, who are they trying to appeal to? What audience are they trying to appeal to? I know the viewing figures are down on this season than last season. Yeah. And obviously that's kind of to be expected. Like season 10, it's like the excitement of the X-Files coming back after so many years. So there's going to be bigger, higher viewing numbers. And there were problems with season 10, which might lead to lower viewing numbers for this season 11. But I think that season 10 was really trying to appeal to both long-time fans of the show, people who'd watched it for a long time, and also people who were new to the show. And I think with season 11, they've scrapped that, and now they are just writing for the audience. They know about the X-Files. They're writing to the audience of people who have watched it for a long time and probably have watched it, well, not even necessarily for a long time, but have watched all the series. And when I think back, I recommended X-Files to a friend of mine who'd never watched it before. And I asked her, like, go ahead, please try and watching it. It's a great series. And she started with season 10, and halfway through it, she was like, I have no idea what's going on. I can't understand anything. This is awful. And so I said, don't go back to season one. And she tried watching season one, and she sort of said, this is so 90s. And when I think about it, I think when I started watching it as a young teenager. And some of the things, like one of the reasons why I like watching season one now is because it is so 90s, and it's a nostalgia, and that's what this episode captures so well, is the nostalgia of the 90s. Because Mulder refers to it when he's standing over Deep Throat's grave, you know, this is a different world, he'd think, you know, he sort of says, like, it was simpler back then. When he was watching, like, Deep Throat's funeral back in the 90s, and even Skinner says, this is a different world now. Even the Russian villain,
yeah,
you know, who's the sort of head of the security, private security company, even he says, like, you don't understand what world you're living in. And there is something to be said, and all the political, global events that have happened over the last couple of years, I think for some people it does feel like we're living in a very different world. Things are changing so fast, and not always for the better,
yeah,
that there's this nostalgic impulse to look back at the past, at a simpler era. Whether it was actually truly simpler, it's not necessarily true. I mean, nostalgia is one of those things, you got a question, really. Are you actually seeing the real past? You know, you're looking at it with rose-tinted glasses. But I think that's what this episode is trying to evoke a little bit.
Well, yeah, it's a real balancing act, isn't it? Because it's nostalgic, but it's also very timely, you know. It's kind of self-referential, but it's also outward looking, and it's concerned with the real world. So I consider this probably the most successful example of, you know, the revival era X-Files to date, for that reason, essentially. And in terms of the commentary on, like, today's world, so this stuff isn't there about the US relations with Russia. Like you said, the guy says, what world are you living in? And at some point he says to Mulder as well, you know, you're on our side. You know, and it's all this theme of privatization, which apparently is going to run through the season, Glenn Morgan has said, which is fascinating. That Deep Throat scene, as you mentioned. So I think what this episode manages, it kind of harkens back to this show has got a great heritage, you know, and I think it's right that they draw on it when appropriate. But I like it when it's coupled to something that seems to have something to say that's relevant about 2018. So in many ways, I thought the key line was Skinner's, when he says, you know, how do we get here? And at the time, he's talking about, like, you know, him and Scully and Mulder, but it seemed quite an apt thing to say when you consider, like, the charged political climate of the day.
Yeah, that's exactly. And I actually think I suspect that's how you're supposed to read it. You know, how did we get here? You know, how did we get into a situation where our own FBI agents are being targeted by, I mean, in the show, I don't mean in real life, but, or actually you could say in real life, our own FBI agents are being targeted by their own government, in the sense that, you know, the government's hired some outside force to come and run things, and to, like he says in the beginning, I think he says something like, they're not supposed to target or arrest other intelligence agents, but sometimes they do, or apparently now they are. How do we get into that situation? And in a way, when Skinner sort of makes that comment about the FBI is not in good standing with the White House, and Mulder sort of quips back, you know, something like, isn't it great that the FBI now know how, maybe the FBI now know how it feels to be a little spooky or whatever. Obviously, they're referring to Trump, aren't they? They're referring to the fact that the White House and the FBI are not in good standing with each other. There is, definitely is this sort of, how did we get here? And I think it's also to do with the technology as well. How did we get here where we're all so glued to phones? How did we get here where we're contemplating living a completely different type of life, like consciousness-wise, you know? It seems very unnatural.
Yeah.
I mean, in a way, being abducted by aliens seems a little bit more natural. I don't know. It's kind of strange, do you know what I mean? So.
No, I mean, there's a sense, isn't there? I mean, I think a lot of people, I mean, we're talking obviously from a British perspective, but there have been moments over the last couple of years to say, you know, what has happened to reality, you know? This isn't the way things are supposed to be. I mean, what I liked here was I thought that Morgan, I think, like, his social commentary seemed a bit more acute to me than Chris Carter's did. Whereas I thought in My Struggle 3, I thought there were lots of fascinating kind of tangents and observations and so on. But there is a bit more kind of scattershot. Whereas I think Morgan kind of landed the blows a bit better, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and he does it subtly. I think he does it more subtly. I think also with Chris Carter, he's also bogged down in... I mean, Glenn Morgan isn't as bogged down as in the mythology as much. So he gives a suggestion of the mythology in this episode. You know, we don't learn a huge amount, but we learn a little bit. Whereas Chris Carter, it's like he's hitting you full in the face with the mythology. You know, he's so busy with them working out the details of the mythology that he's going to struggle to, I don't know, struggle to write about the world, if you see what I'm saying. He's going to struggle to sort of make points about today's world and introduce themes like that without it being really sort of heavy-handed.
Yeah, when you've got such an established framework that kind of needs servicing at the same time. Yeah, I see what you mean.
And also Chris Carter, I think, just has so much to say. So he wants to introduce everything. You know, he wants to introduce ideas about the corruption of power or the mistreatment of women, militarization of the police and the new technology and, you know, foreign interference in the government. You know, and then he also wants to introduce science. He wants lots of science as well. So I think he's got so much to say that he just gets carried away.
Yeah, he's a very excitable chap, it seems.
Yeah, and, exactly.
Yeah, I find it quite endearing, personally. But, like, what you say is correct as well, I think. With Glenn Morgan, and a couple more points in him before we wrap up, I mean, Home Again was, like we said already, like this. That Home Again was a personal story that kind of dealt with contemporary social concerns. So there it was the stuff about, like, you know, living with your artistic creations and so on, alongside the stuff about, like, kind of like the blight of modern urban homelessness. And this one has got a personal component too. He's talked in this interview about, you know, his mother passed away almost a decade ago now, but she was around, you know, the Nintendo Wii had come out. So there's this game, there's this avatar of his mother that's still kind of wandering around in the game console, if that makes sense, you know. So it feels to me like there is a personal component to this story, but it's kind of secondary to, you know, the social commentary stuff. Whereas Home Again was probably a bit too insistent in kind of blending these elements together. I personally felt it just about worked, but it really isn't a problem here, is it? There's not really a sense that, I mean, there's lots of ideas, there's lots going on, but I didn't really get the same sense that stuff's kind of being drowned out, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, Langley is close to Mulder and Scully, but it's not like, in any way, like Scully's mother, do you know what I mean? So
yeah.
I'm sure they care about Langley. They care enough to break into the government facility and try and set him free from his virtual prison. But it's not the same as Scully's mother dying and Scully sort of coping with that. I don't think Home Again was so bad, I have to say. I don't think it was
no,
so
I
bad.
Liked it.
I think it also, one of the things that we haven't really talked about in any of these podcasts, which I'm sure we will talk about in future podcasts, is the running order of episodes. And sometimes episodes do suffer, and we've talked about this in the Podwatch, because of their running order. So I wonder if Home Again wouldn't have received so much criticism if it had been put in between two different episodes than it was. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, I agree, because, I mean, Home Again was supposed to be their first case back on the X-Files as a standalone, and it got moved around. But I think it would have worked better as the first standalone, in the sense that some of the stuff in that episode where they're joking about using flashlights again and stuff like that might have landed a bit better if it was kind of, you know, received as the first one back. Whereas when it kind of gets moved around in the shuffle, I think that maybe came across as a bit too cutesy. But anyway, any final thoughts on this episode, Clara, before we, you know, before we wrap up?
I think that the only thing that I was a bit confused about was the idea that Mulder wouldn't necessarily know about these different private security companies being involved with the government. When Skinner was explaining that to them, and I understand why Skinner has to explain it to them, because somebody in the series has to explain it to the audience, otherwise we don't know what's going on. But I felt a little bit like it seemed surprising to me that he was telling Mulder something that he didn't know about. Because Mulder, I always thought, even if Mulder wasn't on the X-Files, he would be, you know, on the dark web or the dark net or whatever it is, and he would be scanning for conspiracy theories. So the idea that he didn't realise that there was Russian involvement in the FBI or Russian involvement in the US government, that struck me as a bit of a surprise.
Yeah, now that you come to mention it, he did seem a bit out of the loop in that sense. I'm gonna allow it. I'm gonna let Glenn Morgan get away with that, I think. I'll just sum up. I think I thought there were some great, you know, just off kilter moments in this episode. It kind of helped instill this feeling of unease, and we've talked about some of them in the past few days. You know, Skinner saying surrender. You know how jittery Scully was in the bar when the guy serves them their beer. You know, the kind of shock when Langley says, "I'm begging you, destroy it." And I thought all those things were really well judged. And because they were so effective, it meant that the goofy stuff could kind of happily coexist and it didn't overwhelm this episode, you know. So I'm really pleased that we got this episode, and I'm really pleased that we got all those great comic moments. But they were in service of a storyline. I just thought there was a lot to enjoy here. Lots of really good stuff. And yeah, as I've already said, I think, I'm not sure if it was today or another day, but this for me is the best episode of the revival so far. And if we get stuff that kind of tops this later on, you know, it's going to be pretty good, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that, definitely. Yeah. Crossing our fingers, hopefully.
Let's hope so. All right, well, the next episode of the series is Plus One. But I think the next podcast you're going to hear, I think, is we're going to be taking a look at the upcoming Deep State game for mobile phones. So it's quite interesting, actually, coming off the back of this, which kind of some weird commentary on mobile phones, but you know, we've got this game coming up, so you're gonna need to forget about that. All right, so thanks, Clara, for all your company over the last few days. I really enjoyed talking to you, as ever.
Thank you. Yes, it's been really fun.
Where can people find you online, Clara, just before we finish?
So you can find me on Twitter at Clara Jean MC. So if you're interested in having chatting about the X-Files, come over and send me a tweet.
Good stuff. And you can find the X-Cast on Twitter too, at the X_cast. And you can find us on Facebook as well. There's a page there and there's a Facebook group. And if we haven't already, we'll soon be putting the call out for, you know, feedback about this. So please respond to us there, and we'll be doing another mailbag episode very soon. But until next time, trust no one.